Hey, welcome. We're gonna go ahead and get started with the loss of human skills. There's a few things that are lacking in our youth.
Human skills are fleeting. The Gen Z stare is more than just a blank expression. It's a cultural signal. It's a deadpan, unsmiling look often seen in selfies and social media videos, and it reflects a quiet rebellion against performative positivity. Where previous generations might have smiled to project happiness or success, Gen Z often opts for emotional neutrality. This isn't just about looking cool. It's about protecting oneself from judgment, resisting curated perfection, and signaling authenticity in a world saturated with digital performance. It's a kind of emotional armor, a way to say, I've seen it all without saying anything at all. This stare also pairs with another trend, the fading of handwriting. A skill humans have relied on for over 5,500 years is slipping away. Studies suggest that around 40% of Gen Z struggles with handwriting, not just in neatness, but in basic fluency. This isn't just about penmanship, it's about cognition. Writing by hand activates brain regions tied to memory, comprehension, and critical thinking in ways that typing doesn't. The decline of handwriting could mean a decline in deeper processing, slower reflection, and even emotional nuance in communication. Analog depth refers to the richness of experience and cognition that comes from engaging with the physical world. Writing by hand, reading printed texts, making eye contact, and even sitting in silence. These activities activate neural pathways that foster memory retention, emotional regulation, and critical thinking in ways that digital shortcuts often bypass. When societies lean too heavily into digital tools, they risk cultivating surface-level engagement, fast communication without nuance, constant stimulation without reflection, and learning that's more about consumption than contemplation. Over time, this can lead to a population that's less empathetic, less patient, and less capable of deep focus, traits essential for democracy, innovation, and meaningful relationships. Analog depth isn't just nostalgic, it's foundational to human development, and its erosion could reshape how we think, connect, and grow. What's replacing these analog habits? Screens, keyboards, emojis, fast, fragmented messaging. Gen Z is fluent in digital shorthand, but that fluency may come at the cost of depth. The shift isn't inherently bad. Digital tools offer speed and accessibility, but it's a trade-off. We're losing the tactile, personal, and reflective aspects of communication that handwriting and face-to-face interaction once offered. If this trajectory continues, society could see a widening gap between speed and substance. Communication may become more efficient but less thoughtful. Emotional expression might be more public, but less personal. And learning could become more passive, with less engagement in the kind of slow, deliberate thinking that analog tools foster. Is this just a Western phenomenon? Mostly yes. The Gen Z stare and the handwriting decline are most pronounced in cultures deeply tied to social media and digital education systems. In the West, where screens dominate both social and academic life, these shifts are more visible. That signals something important. The more a culture relies on digital tools, the more it risks losing analog depth. For those tethered to computers, it's a wake-up call. Balance matters. Preserving old skills isn't about nostalgia, it's about maintaining cognitive and emotional range. Gen Z isn't broken. They're adapting. But adaptation comes with consequences. The stare says, I'm protecting myself. The loss of handwriting says, I'm moving fast. The challenge for educators, parents, and Gen Z themselves is to find ways to preserve what's valuable, authenticity, reflection, and depth, while still embracing the tools of the future. Because if we lose the ability to slow down, to write, to feel without performing, we risk losing something profoundly human.
Okay, guess technology doesn't always make you smarter, but intuition might. Well, actually, let's ask the Bonobos ape.
Location. The phenomenon explored in the article is known as social tracking, the ability to mentally keep tabs on the whereabouts of others, even when they're out of sight. In a series of hide-and-seek experiments, a bonobo named Kanzi demonstrated that he could track multiple familiar humans at once, identifying their locations based on visual cues and even vocal recognition. This is a cognitive feat once thought to be uniquely human, and it reveals a profound depth to ape social intelligence. What makes this remarkable is that most mammals don't show this level of mental mapping of others. While many animals recognize individuals, dogs know their owners, elephants remember companions, few have been shown to mentally track multiple individuals simultaneously when they're not visible. This kind of mental representation requires working memory, attention, and a nuanced understanding of social relationships. Some birds, like corvids, show elements of this in their ability to remember who's watching them hide food. But the bonobo's ability is more complex and sustained. This capacity speaks volumes about bonobo evolution. Living in dense forests with fluid social groups, bonobos benefit from knowing who's nearby, who's absent, and where allies or rivals might be. Such mental tracking supports cooperation, avoids conflict, and strengthens bonds. It's a sign of advanced social cognition, one that likely evolved because of the demands of their social environment. The fact that bonobos can do this suggests that the roots of human social intelligence run deeper than we thought, shared with our closest primate relatives. Humans, of course, do this instinctively. We mentally track our friends, family, and coworkers, even when they're not physically present. We know where our partner is during the day, remember who's traveling abroad, and anticipate where people will be at certain times. This ability helps us navigate relationships, coordinate plans, and maintain emotional connections. It's so embedded in our cognition that we rarely think about it, but seeing it in bonobos reminds us that it's a product of evolution, not just culture. What can we learn from them? First, that social intelligence isn't exclusive to humans. Bonobos show us that empathy, memory, and relational awareness are part of a broader animal toolkit. Second, it challenges the idea that intelligence is only about tool use or language. Social cognition, knowing who's who, where they are, and what they mean to us, is just as vital. And third, it underscores the importance of relationships in shaping minds. Bonobos evolve to track others because their survival and well-being depend on it. So do ours. The broader implications are compelling. If more animals possess this kind of social tracking, it could reshape how we understand animal consciousness and welfare. It suggests that captivity, isolation, or disrupted social environments may have deeper psychological impacts than we realize. It also invites us to rethink intelligence, not as a ladder with humans at the top, but as a web of different strengths across species. Ultimately, Kanzi's performance isn't just a scientific milestone, it's a mirror. It reflects how deeply social our minds are and how much we share with the natural world. The more we understand animals like bonobos, the more we understand ourselves. And perhaps the more compassion we'll bring to the way we treat other minds, seen and unseen.
Well, I don't have much of a segue for the next one. The plague is back in California for now. Okay.
Found what? A recent case in South Lake Tahoe, California, has jolted public awareness. A resident tested positive for the plague after likely being bitten by an infected flea while camping. Yes, the plague, caused by the bacterium Yersinia pestis, the same disease that wiped out tens of millions during the Middle Ages. Most famously known as the Black Death, the bubonic plague devastated Europe in the 14th century, killing an estimated 25 million people. Back then, it spread rapidly through rat populations and their fleas, thriving in unsanitary conditions and dense urban centers. Today, the plague still exists, but it's rare and treatable. In the United States, an average of 7 human cases are reported annually, mostly in the western states like California, Arizona, New Mexico, and Colorado. The recent Lake Tahoe case is the first in El Dorado County since 2020. The individual is recovering at home under medical care, and health officials are investigating the circumstances of exposure. The plague typically presents in 3 forms: bubonic, septicemic, and pneumonic. Bubonic is the most common and is characterized by fever, chills, weakness, and painfully swollen lymph nodes. If untreated, it can progress to septicemic plague, which affects the bloodstream, or pneumonic plague, which infects the lungs and is the most contagious and deadly form. Symptoms usually appear within 2 weeks of exposure, and early treatment with antibiotics is highly effective. This finding is a reminder that nature still holds ancient threats, especially in areas where wild rodents like squirrels and chipmunks are common. Fleas feeding on these animals can carry the bacteria and transmit it to humans or pets. In fact, dogs and cats can bring plague-infected fleas into the home. Surveillance in the Tahoe Basin has found dozens of rodents exposed to plague over the past few years, with 4 new cases in 2025 alone. To stay safe, public health officials recommend several precautions. Avoid contact with wild rodents and never feed squirrels or chipmunks. Keep pets leashed and away from rodent burrows. Use flea control products on animals and insect repellents containing DEET when hiking or camping. Don't camp near animal burrows or areas where dead rodents are found. If you develop flu-like symptoms after visiting a known plague area, seek medical attention immediately and inform your doctor of the potential exposure. This case isn't cause for panic, but it is a wake-up call. The plague isn't a relic of history. It's a living disease that still circulates in pockets of the natural world. With proper awareness and precautions, it can be prevented and treated. But it also reminds us of the delicate balance between human activity and wildlife. As we venture into nature, we must respect its risks and stay informed. The past may be behind us, but its pathogens are still very much alive.
Well, yeah, let's lighten it up a bit with some quantum entanglement.
We are one. Quantum entanglement is one of the most mind-bending phenomena in physics. It describes a situation where two particles become so deeply linked that the state of one instantly influences the state of the other, no matter how far apart they are. Einstein famously called it spooky action at a distance, and for decades, it's been the backbone of quantum theory, quantum computing, and secure communication. The recent study led by Yuya Kosuke and colleagues at Kyushu University, Caltech, and the University of Tokyo reveals something profound. Quantum entanglement follows universal rules across all dimensions of space and time. Using a tool called thermal effective theory, they showed that a mathematical measure called Rényi entropy behaves predictably even in complex, higher-dimensional systems. This is a breakthrough because most previous research focused on simple one-dimensional systems. Now, scientists can better understand entanglement in the messy, multidimensional reality we actually live in. What's fascinating is that spiritual thinkers have long embraced a version of this idea, that everything is interconnected, that consciousness or energy can be shared across space. While science and spirituality often speak different languages, this study feels like a bridge. It's not that scientists are admitting something spiritualists already knew, but rather that they're finally able to describe it with mathematical precision. The overlap is striking. Both camps are pointing to a hidden unity beneath apparent separation. So what does this say about humanity? It suggests that our instinctive sense of connection, whether through empathy, intuition, or love, might not be just poetic metaphor. It could be rooted in the very structure of reality. If particles can be entangled across space, perhaps our minds, emotions, or even social bonds operate on similar principles. That's where bonobos come in. These apes are known for their peaceful, cooperative behavior and strong social bonds. Could their neurological or behavioral patterns reflect a kind of biological entanglement? It's speculative, but intriguing. Bonobos seem to embody a kind of harmony that quantum entanglement metaphorically supports, connection without proximity. In daily life, this discovery might not change how you make coffee or pay bills, but it can shift your worldview. It invites us to see ourselves not as isolated individuals, but as part of a vast, interconnected web. That shift can influence how we treat others, how we build communities, and how we approach global challenges. In society, it could inspire new models of cooperation, empathy, and even governance. Systems that recognize interdependence rather than competition. Factually, it's important to know that quantum entanglement is not magic. It doesn't allow for faster-than-light communication or time travel. But it does allow for correlations that defy classical logic. And now, thanks to this study, we know those correlations obey universal laws, even in the most complex dimensions imaginable. That's not just a scientific milestone. It's a philosophical one. It tells us that beneath the chaos of life, there may be a hidden order, a blueprint of connection that binds everything together.
Your content deserves more than likes. Make it earn. Start monetizing today for CornersTV.net.
All right, and until the next time when we meet at the crossroads. Peace.